Hello and welcome to the officially unofficial podcast for FX's American Horror Show, the American Horror Story podcast by Bald Move. This is the one for the cult season, season 7. It's episode 703, Neighbors from Hell. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
And we are here to talk about these things. What did you think of this episode?
I liked it.
Yeah?
I liked it. It was balls to the wall, gonzo, Ryan Murphy style.
Yeah.
And... yeah, I mean, last week they gave us a little too much realness.
Right.
This time everything lines up perfectly. The coincidences are all just so.
Well, I feel like that Aronofsky's mother gave me the Rosetta Stone to understand this. That sometimes an allegory can crawl so far up its own ass that people aren't even real, and you don't have to worry about the consequences to them. They may be punched. Their babies may be eaten. But it's cool because they're not even a person in the eye of the director. They're just archetypes. They're just Jungian archetypes. There's the scarecrow and the Earth Mother Goddess, and that's what this American Horror Story season is. So I'm enjoying it. Like, you know, I don't have to worry about if Oz is a realistic child because he is there to be to be shocked and put into danger.
You have problems with Oz?
No. Oz is great in so much as he's not a real person.
Okay.
So, sure. I actually thought, and there's a couple things I thought were really chilling. Like, I don't know what point Murphy is necessarily making still, and I wonder whether, you know, whether he has it in mind or if he's just feeling things or what. But I remember that, like, I went as a young man, saw a lot of Paul Verhoeven's work, RoboCop, Starship Troopers. And I remember thinking, man, this is such overblown parody. This is like, it doesn't connect or hit anything. And you watch these things today and it's like, God damn, man was prescient. So maybe
we're not living in a RoboCop future.
Have you seen Detroit?
No.
No, it's not just that. It's the fact that, like, in New Detroit City, like, corporations had taken over the legal government and everything had been done for the lowest bidder and the lowest cost, and, you know, the people had been bought and sold and fed a bunch of bullshit by the masses. And of course, you know, Starship Troopers is essentially showing how democracy can slide into fascism. And those things are, like, you know, really, like, of a moment right now. So maybe Murphy is just trying to tell a parable of, like, what happens with right-wing and left-wing culture if it continues to mutate into the directions it is.
Well, here's the thing.
Maybe he's a prophet.
Here's the thing is that there have been very earnestly written articles about people who are feeling triggered by this season of American Horror Story. Because it's, you know, playing on all these phobias. But I guess people aren't understanding the irony of this person being triggered by these images and then being triggered in the same way and lashing out against a TV show. I mean, nobody had a problem with the first 6 seasons of American Horror Story triggering them in some way or another.
Uh-huh. And also here's the thing, like, it always makes me mad when people make fun of the term of trigger. Like, you triggered, because, like, it's a real thing. Like, you know, soldiers coming back from war get triggered by, I don't know, an automobile backfiring or, you know, loud noises or whatnot.
Right, and now that soldiers being more accepted or people being more accepting of soldiers having actual triggers,
like understand.
Now they're making fun of people who haven't been to war and don't have the same reasons to be triggered.
Right, but on the other hand, you've also got a lot of liberal types that are like, I'm triggered in spaces that are not safe. And you're never going to make all of society safe because that's not the planet we live on. So, like, American Horror Story is an aggressively not safe space. If you don't have your shit kind of together and healed up, like, and you are a survivor of any number of crazy things, this is going to really fuck with you. So, like, don't watch it if you're that in that fragile a state.
And isn't that the expectation going in?
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Thought. So yeah. It's like, it's weird that someone would say I'm triggered by a horror show culture comedy. I'm not saying that like it, like it couldn't still like within that lane be transgressive, but Jesus, you know,
right.
I don't know.
It's not like he tricked anyone into being there like Darren Aronofsky did during the right. premiere of Mother.
Right.
There's no end of those Mother jokes Rosemary's that are going to happen
tonight. No, it's not. It's the greatest story ever told. Get out of here.
Should we start the episode prepare?
We should. 703, Neighbors from Hell. So there's this woman that we don't know, and we're like, why the fuck should we care? Explaining how her husband, Mark, kisses her, and her world goes black. And she thinks she's buried alive, and it turns out she's got ferretrophobia, which is not the fear of ferrets. I actually looked it up. It's the fear of caskets and sarcophaguses, and by inference, being buried alive. And turns out that her father locked her in the cabinets, and she's got all the – and her husband's there and saying how brave she was to conquer, and our doctor, who I don't know his name.
Can I just I don't know.
Dr. Feelgood.
Mark made the most of his small amount of time on screen.
Oh, he worked it.
Yeah.
He
gave us
it.
All the ass and the most caring, loving husband up until the point where he died.
Do you think that part of his initial casting call was him dropping trow and showing his ass? Because
absolutely.
That, look, we want you to deliver a heartfelt praise for your wife, and then we want you to have a solid white man butt.
I mean, to be fair, that's sort of the criteria for any man on the show. Except perhaps Billy Eichner and Dennis O'Hare.
What about jerk-off guy?
Pass. And, we didn't see his ass, so I can't say Dennis, whether or not that's true.
And Dennis O'Hare has a superb ass.
And two giant penises.
Fourth penis, yes. Glad you followed me there. So anyway, back home, they decide to celebrate because she's got
for
over...
For those of you who don't know who Dennis O'Hare is, it's Russell Edgington. It's his
name. That's, you know... We can't refer to him as his characters anymore. We got to keep it Russell Edgington. Back home, they decide to celebrate because now she can get laid. And turns out the clowns are there, and they stuff them in the matching caskets that they've put in their bedroom, and they bolt the casket shut... Making me wonder, is the doctor in on this?
The doctor, that's how
that's the
Kai
only
and Winter are following.
Yes.
Or started targeting Allie and Ivy.
And the
is
new
because
every.
He sent them there. It all
exactly.
makes sense.
Exactly. Now, it may. Although they are. And plus, like later on, he's going to be playing with these smiley face buttons, like Watchmen style.
Oh, yeah.
Which is even like. Boy, they skipped the three-step Martin reveal and just slapped us around to stage three. Because I'm almost thinking. He can't be the ringleader. There's got another twist coming because there's no way we blew this plot wide open in episode three.
Think about past seasons.
That's true.
But also, Ivy was telling the truth last episode when she said that the doctor was just in the neighborhood. He just happened to be across the street painting a bloody face on someone's door.
Yeah.
So she's absolved of all sin.
No, I Ivy for sure I don't think is in on it. So anyway, back
are these people on casket people, are they in the same block?
I think so.
I feel
in
like they alluded to that.
In the same town for sure.
Yeah.
So Allie's at home weeping because it's the night that Pedro was shot, and she is worried about being prosecuted and also feeling sad for shooting her employee, and the cop helpfully says, hey, Mission's got a stand your ground law, dark figure.
He
quote,
feeds
unquote,
her an
dark,
alibi.
Dark figure approaches you. You're terrified. You shoot him. It's a clean shoot. And also, he's a person of interest, killing a bunch of white folk. So you're off the hook. And she says, and then I thought Ivy was going to like maybe feel bad about sin, but no, she's saying it's not your fault. And they should have worried about Oz being traumatized, whether Allie can live with it. I don't know. Can Allie live with killing an innocent man?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think...
She can't live with the protesters outside of her restaurant, though.
That's not a good
look. Do you understand
look.
What a specific pain that is?
Yes, for someone like her to be accused of racism...
She can't sleep anymore.
Yeah. So they're thinking, all right, well, we'll just put this shit behind us. They pull up the Butcher on Main restaurant, and there's protesters everywhere. She's being called on news... being breathlessly reported by Letty Mae, also the actress's name, called the lesbian George Zimmerman, and Allie begs to be let to go home instead of confronting these people, and Ivy's like, hey, we still have a business with employees. We can't, you know, we gotta buck up for this.
That's a perfectly legitimate reason to close down a business for a few days.
Right. People wanting to, you know, have you strung up posse style? Sure.
It's pretty annoying that these people start protesting with zero facts.
Well, I mean, that's a little bit of like, you know, that's a little bit of commentary because there's surely a lot of, you know, bullshit that is properly protested. But every once in a while, people, something will get kind of ginned up by the media or the personalities involved, and it turns out it's maybe a tempest in a teapot. And the unfortunate thing is that one incident will be cited forevermore by the people that want to minimize all the rest of the bullshit going on. It's like, well, this is why you can't listen to these fucking idiots, because they said the police shot an unarmed 7-year-old, and it turns out he was 73 with a minigun. And they just got the shit, or shit, I don't know. Anyway, it's stupid. So Ivy says, you know what, pussy, I'm gonna drop me off, I'm gonna go around back, you drive home, stay with Oz. She does that, goes to leave, and guess what? Kai stops her car, says, hey, you're brave, you're protecting your family, I'm gonna take care of these protesters for you. Don't ask any questions. Do you see me? I'm dressed as an Amish person. I mean business. And he tells her to have a nice day, which connects him. You know, we wondered about whether he fits into the clown hierarchy. Well, this whole have a nice day, if you've seen Forrest Gump, you know that's intimately connected to the smiley face. So,
are you saying Forrest Gump is the ringleader of this clown cult?
I think if
we've cracked
if Forrest Gump shaved his beard, he's a dead ringer for Dr. Feelgood.
Okay.
So that's what I think. Into it. Neighbors Harrison and Meadow come over in sombreros and talk a mess about white privilege and how he went on 23andMe and found out he's chromosomally 10% Mexican. They throw Taco Bell coupons because she loves her white appropriation of Mexican cuisine. They want the racists out of our neighborhoods. Allie says, your neighborhood, this is my neighborhood first. And then Meadow says, tell it to the Native Americans, and they get the door slammed shut on them.
If she's not going to use those Taco Bell coupons, I hope she doesn't just throw them away.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing is like, I mean, I know these people are all in on it. And they're just fucking with Allie, but to the extent, like, I don't know. See, that's the thing. Like, I'm not going to take in this shit seriously, because like, I do feel like there's elements of this shit that actually is expressed in the real world. Like, every time I see, you know, speaking of Billy Eichner, every time I see like a protest in New York with a giant fucking rat representing Wall Street or Donald Trump, I roll my eyes so far they fall back into my skull and slam into my pelvis and bounce back and almost pop out of my head from the force.
Wow.
That's a fucking eye roll. Because like really? Really? You drug this fucking rat? Why? Is it to get, like, does it look good on TV?
How guilty are Harrison? Oh, never mind.
Does it make the Wall Street fat cats uncomfortable?
Does it change anyone's mind? To get new animals every time. You never know what's going to be in style, and you got to get a new animal made.
Yeah.
Or whatever you want to, you know, analogize them into being.
You just get one inflatable rat and just put in, you just tailor him. That's what you do.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love our right to protest, and I love it when we peaceably assemble and like rattle pot power's cage. But holy shit, some stuff about protest culture really drives me crazy. Like these people showing up with Taco Bell coupons and sombreros.
Right.
Anyway,
so they're not conservatives like we wondered about before.
Yeah.
Just when I got around to thinking that them wearing sombreros, they were going to congratulate her like Kai was,
yeah,
on the killing. And just when I got around to thinking the sombreros were sort of appropriation,
right.
They said it.
Right.
And I don't know what that says about me.
No, that's the thing. It's like, that's the thing, because that's why I feel even stupid for saying that rant that I did, because, again, these aren't real people. These aren't – they do not represent any political spectrum.
But they're starting
because
to.
Because they're cult.
That's what's
they're,
weird.
But they joined this cult, right? So liberal, maybe. Conservative doesn't really matter. It's whatever Kai wants them to be, I guess.
So everyone who does the finger lock thing becomes a member of the cult? Is that what we're getting here?
That's what I'm thinking.
That makes sense.
All right.
Oh.
What?
Okay, I want to save it till the next therapy scene.
Okay. So there's a news report by Letty Mae on the coffin couple that we saw in the prologue. They've been dead for a week, which is kind of weird because a week of time has not elapsed. So I guess we had a prequel scene in the beginning. Anyway, the cops can't commit on the smiley face that they saw spray painted on the crime scene. And as Allie and Ivy are processing this horrifying new report in their neighborhood, a truck rumbles through spraying this glowing green gas. And I'll tell you this.
Tell me.
All Murphy had to do was put a clown that looks like Jack Nicholson as the Joker throwing dollar bills in the air and blaring Prince, and I didn't need anything else from the season. I would have said nothing but good things from here on out. That's a real missed opportunity. You got the Smilex gas. You got the clown theme. What the fuck?
Little too on the nose.
Maybe you could get Lady Gaga to do like a Lady Gaga version of 1999.
Oh, there you go. I like that idea.
You'd be blaring that instead. That'd be pretty sweet. So wonder what's going on. So that now I'm starting to think that those blue barrels that we thought were beekeeping equipment, that's this Smilex gas.
I don't know.
And they snuck into the neighborhood.
I think those are all just bees.
I don't know.
They're backup bees. So when the bees outside die, because that's what they do in the environment,
right?
They just go in the barrel, get another scoop of bees, and just dump them in their honeycombs. That's how bees work, right?
It is. It's just like getting crickets at PetSmart.
Okay.
So next morning, Allie is catatonically staring out in the yard. Ivy goes to see what she's looking at, and guess what? It's filled with dead fucking birds.
What?
True story. It's Cecily and I this weekend. We're doing this. It's our last river float of the year. We live by the Little Miami River. It was really hot last weekend. So we jumped in, float down the river like we do. There is these gentlemen in an F-350 pickup truck.
Gentleman is a very kind and generous word.
With the truck bed down, and they're just hawking things like hand over fist into the water.
It looked like a movie. There was one primary guy who was doing something in the truck bed, and then he had like, I swear, twins on either side of him that were doing the throwing of whatever into the river.
Yeah. And we're like kind of floating by, and we realize there are dozens, if not hundreds, of dead birds.
Yeah. Like bird wings.
Yeah.
Bird skeletons.
Yeah.
Like they were stripping something off the bird.
Not chickens. Not like
pigeons.
And not they weren't even pigeons. They were some kind of I don't know what they were. Maybe they were pigeons. But
it was just your standard bird.
I was triggered. How dare Ryan Murphy put dead bird imagery less than a week after
I was
traumatized.
That was super weird. If anyone listening knows why you would do such a thing in real life, please.
The only thing
I'm thinking
is like they're like baiting this to be the ultimate catfish fishery because they're going to be used to eating that dead shit, and then they just I don't know, but it was weird. So Ivy calls Winter back to their house after this experience, which Allie objects, but not too strenuously because she's hoping for another finger bang. They explain to her she's not fired because, you know, it wasn't cool that she left. It was a pretty messed up night and no one made great decisions. You know, Allie here shot a dude. And then she goes, oh, well, I was afraid to replace me because the guy was here because of an ad and I let him in. They go flying in thinking that this is a clown to kill Ozzy, and it turns out it's just an overweight middle-aged dude furiously cranking his dick, saying, I hope y'all are hungry. And it turns out that someone has placed an ad in, I guess, the Ryan-verse version of Craigslist.
It's Craigslist.
Ryan's List.
No, it's Craigslist.
Okay. That says that these two hot lesbians wanted a bunch of man milk. And don't call, don't write, just show up. And to fill their guts. Some of this stuff was really I you can't do anything but laugh.
So here's
Latin lovers need not apply. So Allie's like, I know it, those goddamn neighbors, they're fucking with us again, having these guys come in and wanting to jack off on us.
Yeah.
Your take?
Do you think the neighbors are responsible for all of that?
Yes.
You do?
I mean, it's
I think the doctor was placing the Craigslist ads.
Between the axis, I mean, I treat the doctor, Kai, and the neighbors as one unit, and Winter. Like, they're all the Orkin man sent from the Orkin company.
Okay.
And they're here to take care of your roach problem.
All right.
Also, we talked about their bathroom, their bomb-ass bathroom last episode.
Yeah.
Can we get a little bit of awesome library door arch
kind of really
love?
Cool.
Like, that fucking arcing bookshelf is the bee's knees, all respect due to Harrison.
What is it called when you are sexually attracted to homes or houses?
Domiciliophilia.
You make it sound like a dirty thing. I think Ryan is...
You're the one who wants to fuck houses, perv.
Is Ryan duplexual?
Yeah,
because he's loves in the, those
he's,
shots.
He's in A and B units.
They're very long, lingering shots just on like the home itself.
No.
He's been splitting the time equally between the shots of the house and Sarah Paulson's lips. But
right, you know how like Vince Gilligan always said New Mexico was the main character of Breaking Bad.
No,
well, Allie and Ivy's house is the main character of season 7 of American Horror Story Cult.
And I get it. I am a glad member of that cult.
They should call it American Horror Story House.
That's the big twist of the season.
Oh, really? Well, they already use Murder House, and like House just seems reductive.
You haven't seen the season. You don't understand.
Yeah,
there's complexities. To
I don't.
It.
I don't get that. I didn't live it. I don't get to talk that way
about that life.
So next day, Allie calls her doctor, Dr. Feelgood, and says, "I know I'm supposed to be responsible for all the negative and positive energy in my life." Which he says, "Who told you that?" And she says, "The gram." And the whole conversation, the doctor's playing with smiley face buttons. Because now I'm worried that this is actually too obvious and there's going to be some kind of twist. But she's just sitting there saying, like, look, I can't deal with these neighbors. And he's like, well, I'm worried for you because you have these phobias and they're made worse by stress. And I think you should commit yourself to, like, an institution.
Interesting. What's the end game?
I mean, I imagine if they got her into this institution for 3 weeks and they could control what goes – like I think they're trying to recruit her is what I think. And her going into a inpatient facility where they can control her drugs and her experiences would do the final – it was like when Anakin killed the younglings. It just sealed the deal.
I have a theory.
All right.
What if the doctor is Kyan Winter's older brother? And that's his fancy house they're all living in together.
What if it's I think he's too old. I think it's more – he's more of a father.
Too old to be his brother?
I think so. Isn't that guy like 45? How old's Evan P?
Evan P's got to be like 30. I mean, I guess it could work, but I don't know how old their characters are.
Yeah.
Which is what's really important.
Well, I mean, how old is Kai? Is Kai younger than or older
or
than Winter?
Or maybe they're not any of them related, but they just kind of forms a commune.
Because I think we got that's all podcast. I think that we found out that Winter can't be more than 23.
Why?
Because
she
skipped
out
of
Vassar.
Right. So I don't think that Kai is too many years older or younger than her. So, I think that Dr. Feelgood could be their dad's or an uncle.
I'm going for brother.
Okay. All right.
I have a younger brother who is 14 years younger than me. The big age difference is not uncommon.
All right. It's not all that common either.
You know what?
Anyway, so she's like, fuck all that. She pulls up to all the protesters and she's like, you know what? I'm just going to just tell these people how it is. And she goes from, I'm one of you, to honking and calling them all motherfuckers in like 5 seconds.
She cracked immediately.
Yes. It's like when you see elite, wealthy liberals walk through downtown L.A. and they're like, my God, won't someone do something with all these homeless people? You know, like they go from like, oh, my God, won't someone think of like, oh, my God, why are these people around me? And it's right. I just thought it was pretty delicious.
What did you think about Kai magnetoing the crowd?
He did. He just didn't he was more Professor X-ing them.
Yeah.
And he said, I was just thinking Evan Peters was Professor X. And I'm like, nope, not buying it. I don't care how much he shaves his head. Anyway, I don't know, because if I was Allie, I'd be thinking this is a put on. No man can disperse. Like, I thought he would roll up on him like a curb in Baltimore with baseball bats or run him off with some of his buddies.
Yeah, that's what I thought would happen too.
And I thought that would actually be kind of cool.
And as paranoid as Allie is,
right?
I don't know how she doesn't put this together immediately. This man showed up at my house and threatened me.
Right.
This man showed up at my work, was waiting there for me, and threw a latte on me. This man found me parked down the street away from the protesters like he was waiting.
Yeah.
And then suddenly all the protesters listened to what he has to say.
Yeah.
That tells me that he probably organized for them all to even be there in the first place.
Yeah,
and that was my first thought. And I'm not all that paranoid.
The other thought I had is he keeps saying like this, have a nice day to her, in exactly kind of the way that the villain told you in Bioshock to thank you kindly for everything. And I'm wondering if they're not suggesting that this is some trigger word, that they've actually indoctrinated her or did something to her before, and they're like activating her by saying the specific phrase.
Oh, you mean
because he leans in and he enunciates have a nice day twice to her in this episode in a very peculiar way. It
right.
could just be that they're Ryan Murphy's like, mouth it slow so the audience will get it. They're stupid, and they won't. I have to beat him over the head, obviously.
Evan, do not scream at this time.
Yes, right.
Do not scream
it in her
face.
This is the 37th take. Don't fucking... And that's that. That was Evan Peters using every ounce of his control.
Or the
have a nice... Die! No, he didn't.
They gave him horse tranquilizers, and that was his most... Yeah. He's still amped up, but they got him. They got
Botoxed
him
his larynx and pumped him full of tranquilizers. So we go home, and the parents, the moms, are shocked to find out that Winter has apparently gotten Oz a guinea pig, and Allie objects because she's sensitive to dander, because of fucking course she is.
Well, we all are.
She's also sensitive to cis-normative
pet names,
which,
yeah.
Look, I'm all woke on the whole cis-hetero-gender-normative business, but extending it to a fucking guinea pig? Like, what? Unless the guinea pig can articulate the difference between his sex and gender and how he feels more comfortable in a female a guinea pig's body, then what the fuck are we doing here?
Ozymandias is a pretty narcissistic gendered name, right?
If they actually named him after that, that is pretty
funny.
That's
what she called him.
Oh, that's right. Oh,
yeah,
my God.
That's
yeah.
his name.
Yeah, you got no expectations for that kid's
masculinity. But we can't put that kind of pressure on small, stupid animals.
Are you saying women can't be powerful? They can't be arrogant rulers of ancient Egypt?
That's
because,
what Ali's
hello,
saying.
Cleopatra.
That's what Ali's saying.
Ah, she's the real... misogynist.
She really is. She's really misogynist, racist, murderer, all of those things. I don't know about Winter.
What
I feel about her, really, uh-huh. but when it comes to her v. Allie,
uh-huh.
I'm always on Winter's side.
Plus,
and her calling her on her shit.
Yeah, Winter's got a solid... She doesn't even jab for the obvious, like, what the fuck is wrong with you people? She goes with, like, well, if you don't allow pets, why do you got all these rules against the naming of it? And I'm like, solid point by the psychopath.
Point.
Right. Who's the crazy one now?
Is that a Monopoly Man joke?
No, I don't even know. I know, huh?
Okay.
Anyway, so he explains that the lady, they're all pissed at Winter, but Winter explains the lady from across the street, the funny hat, gave it to them. So Allie's like, well, this is bullshit. Say your goodbyes. And Ozzy says, I wish I could say my goodbyes to you. I didn't buy the performance. The performance is not viable, but you know
but
what?
I'm with this kid.
Ozzy's not a real. He's not a real person, and neither is Allie, so it doesn't really matter.
I don't understand your problem with Ozzy. I don't think he's a bad child actor.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he's not portraying a real child or a person.
Oh, okay.
And that's not his fault. He's delivering lines as written, as the way the director tells him to.
That's fine.
He's, he's just one of the random background people in Mother. Who knows what the hell he's actually is? He's not. I just know he's not a person.
Zing.
Zing. So she calls Harrison and Meadow on the phone, and it turns out they're all watching TV, but Harrison, he's busting out his one night of Detroit. He's got a boyfriend over, and they're making googly eyes at each other.
It's the detective.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
You didn't get that?
Seriously?
That's the detective.
Holy shit, you're right. I didn't recognize him without the trench coat.
The trench coat. Yeah, he's in on it too.
How did I not recognize his absurdly tanned, bleached hair? No way, that's premature gray. No, how? Wow. Wow. So they're all in on it.
They're all in on it.
Okay.
Everyone.
Okay. Well, that's the thing.
That's why, like, him
here's the thing.
Feeding
like, how can
the alibi to her earlier in the episode sort of, like, helped that along.
This is why this... Okay. Now I'm starting to narrow in on why this season is fundamentally gutless. Because if you're going to do some kind of parody or some kind of, what do they call that? It's not parody.
Satire?
Satire. If you're going to do some kind of political satire, don't engineer it to where anything you're trying to satirize is a deranged cult member. Like, you're letting everyone off the hook. You're letting stupid liberals off the hook. You're letting fascists off the hook. You're letting you're letting police off the hook. You're letting clowns off the hook. Like, it's so weird. It's like if you marched on Congress and you pulled their mask off and they're all robots. Oh, it's not people like you and me. It's some other crazy ass person. And it's just like, I know it's the writer equivalent of watching someone make a joke and just say, ha, just kidding.
Yes.
You're fat. Ha, just kidding. I don't like you. Ha, just kidding. I'm just joking. Like, what the fuck, man? You're giving me whiplash here.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
I think this has been a good talk.
Very well ranted.
I'm glad you're here for me.
Of course.
I'm glad we can figure this stuff out together. She tries to start shit and says, look, you're an asshole. And he goes, look, it's fine to have two moms, but at least giving them a Manny. he accuses them of swimming in light and white privilege and estrogen. So they need a Mr. Guinea over there to like add some testosterone to the mix.
Okay.
And Meadow gets in there and fires a cheap shot about being a lesbian. And then they hang up on her. And here comes the green spewing truck. Allie runs out in front of it and demands, as a U.S. citizen, to see, she's making a citizen's arrest of the Joker truck.
That was great.
And she wants to see her permit. And they just kind of run her over and she crumples through the side and gets sprayed with the green shit.
She smashes her head against that curb hard.
Well, you know, she had the lip cushion. She's all right.
You noticed.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty, like, I thought they were going for.
You only notice it when she's crying.
Yeah.
And she's always crying.
Have you seen, you know, those YouTube videos about sovereign citizens?
Mm-mm.
Where there's, like, this really particular, like right of libertarian branch where they got this secret conspiracy that the U.S. Constitution has been subverted and there's, like, a fake U.S. government, and they think if they say like they're sovereign citizens and they're free traveling or something, that police can't do anything to them. And there's this all these YouTube videos of like dash cam and badge cam of these people just like it's like Skyler in Breaking Bad saying, am I being detained? Only she's saying like Elvish. And it's kind of sad and funny. There's also guys where like they're standing before a judge and the judge is trying to rein them. And they're like saying, are you Bobby Smith? Is like, no, I'm not Bobby Smith. Bobby Smith is my registered corporation. And the judge is like, okay, so who are you? And he's like, well, I'm Bobby Smith. I was like, well, how's that different from Bobby? And they just keep going. And like the judge is like, okay, well, whoever you are, corporation or person, you're spending the night in jail. It's just funny.
It
and
never
I thought,
works.
No, God, no, because it's not true. It's bullshit. It's like those ones that say they don't have to pay taxes because Social Security is a scam.
Well, you're a fool if you don't think I'm trying it next time I get pulled over.
I hope you do. Can you record it and we release it on Instagram?
Yes.
On the gram? I'm sorry, folks. I'm sorry. I'm on a lot of cold medicine. I've been sick all week.
Stop apologizing.
This is rambling. You're right. I got to make this podcast worse. It's the only way to be something. What was I saying? Oh, I thought when she said I demand my rights as a U.S., I thought she was going to go on some kind of sovereign citizen rant, and I got excited.
I also Google sovereign citizen on YouTube. I'm definitely going to use that next time I'm feeling threatened by some sort of government figure.
Oh, yeah. She was aggressively flexing her rights, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's good.
So we then see Kai play Pinky Promise with Meadow because, of course, we figured this out like three scenes ago. He asks her what she's afraid of, and she says, I'm afraid Sonya from The Real Housewives has a drinking problem. And he slaps her out of her chair.
Yeah.
And I hope to see that become an AHS meme, because it would be hilarious to, like, any random fragment of a Ryan Murphy interview to, like, put that under white text as what she's saying, and having Kai as a viewer slap her out and say, why are you wasting our time?
Yeah, I just need a gif of that to send to all of my coworkers at the end of every email.
It's a good slappy episode, this episode.
Yeah.
You got a solid slap Ivy happy. To Allie slap, too.
Yep.
Slaptown, Michigan. He goes, don't hide behind the humor. Or she goes, I hide behind the humor. He says, stop anesthetizing yourself. And know your pain. And her real pain is that she's going to die alone and childless and never be penetrated by a man. And she's afraid that Harrison's turning against her. And he's whispering with his boyfriend and being conspiratorial. And he says, you should stop saying sorry, that from now on everything else in your life is someone else's fault. If you want to matter and be an important person, you have to make the world wrong.
Yes.
Which that, again, has not the entire rest of the episode been super toothless, would be a pretty right on and chilling message, like cautionary tale, like something Big Brother-esque. Like,
yeah.
If you know, you want to hold your biases so much that you're going to make the facts of the world wrong and declare things to be fake and unreal when they disagree with you, that's like a real problem in the land of social media.
I don't necessarily disagree with that either.
What he's saying?
Yeah.
Well, that you should do that?
Yeah.
Or that you have to fight fire with fire? Okay, I will like to hear more of this from your newsletter.
Okay. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts about serial killers lately.
Okay.
And a lot of what makes a serial killer or, you know, breaks a person is when you start to merge their sexuality with their feelings of badness. When they have this sexual awakening and their mother is also spanking them with high heels, then you get Ed Gein or yeah. something like that.
Yeah.
You know, Jeffrey Dahmer was made to feel bad and gross and not worthy because he was homosexual in the mm-hmm. 70s, which is mm-hmm. a hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But people also gave him a really hard time for it or just made him feel very ashamed of himself early on. So right. he turned into a serial killer.
Yeah.
So basically, like, anything and everything that you do when you're raising your children could potentially turn them into serial killers.
Okay.
What I'm getting at is, oh, fuck, what was the point?
It's your turn now.
what was the point? Okay, so if those serial killers sort of had a can-do attitude, I don't think they would have killed anyone. If they had just looked at the rest of the world and said, fuck you, I am going to have sex with men sometimes.
Well, so that's an interesting... Because you
things
do...
could have been different.
Like, I can relate to that. Growing up in a very repressive, conservative, real cult environment, I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness. Again, baldmove.com/about if you want to see more about it.
Are you confessing right now?
To having my lid flipped. And sometimes you grow up in a pocket of wrongness in the world and you need to call bullshit on that so you can break through into the real world and see, oh my God, I'm breathing the free air. But it's super dangerous to think that you're in that situation and you're fighting for the truth in this oppressive Orwellian environment and you're just actually living in the real world already. That's how, like, there's two ends of this. There's like the cult, and then the other end, there's the conspiracy theorist. And both, the opposite of crazy is still crazy.
What?
As Dr. Feelgood would, I'm sure, tell you.
Well, or we're you on can the check cult it out on, spectrum right now.
You could check him out on the gram, too. so, yeah, I mean, I feel what you're saying, but it's weird. It's like whether are you really paranoid, and are you really right, and are you really being, or is this just, like, bullshit you're telling yourself? Who's to say? Who's to say? Anyway, Allie's awaiting some blood tests for her spraying because she's sure it gave her some kind of, I don't know, black lung cough.
Right in her mouth.
They're at the butchery and there's no more protests. Kai fixed it forever. The family's all there. Ozzy and Ivy and Allie. There's too many E's in this family. And they're all having dinner. It's pretty cute, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
They almost look like a real couple.
Right.
Like, this is Campbell's new ice cream. Like, they're trying soup.
It's the
Campbell's ice cream soup commercial. Why not? We're making fucking mint green tea oil ice cream. We're making I saw beer ice cream. They're just fucking with ice cream. They can't leave. They got to make it molecular and shit. I don't like it. And they're contributing to this. And no one's going to call them out because even this is toothless criticism. So Allie decides in a fit of, I don't know, family unity to let Oz keep the guinea pig. Because, you know, come on.
Because why not?
How much dander are you going to get from a goddamn guinea pig?
Agreed.
So they come back home.
Guinea pigs are gross, though.
They come back home after having a really nice, positive night, and they find out this smiley face has been painted on it, and the door's slightly ajar, and Oz runs in and finds Mr. Guinea in the microwave, and just as he gets there, it explodes, which I found both shocking and hilarious.
Mr. Guinea's brand of chunky salsa.
coming this winter from Campbell's.
Just like you're back home. What is with this kid and just running into houses?
I don't know. He's he watched season one and two of The Walking Dead, and he just thought Coral is his role model.
I think he might be the ringleader here.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he's really traveled back in time? He's actually Dr. Feelgood that's reborn as a lesbian surrogate fetus. I'm making fun of Game of Thrones theaters. That's all. Okay. So they go to confront the neighbors, and I'm thinking, like, what would we do if we had neighbors like Harrison and Meadow? And again, like, Allie deserves some of what she's getting, but like, having neighbors crazy enough to like do shit like you hear that all the time, like they poison pets or they shine bright lights through your windows, like that's hell. Having bad neighbors must be the fucking worst.
Yeah, because you're committed to being there.
Yeah,
your lease isn't gonna run out in a few months. No,
you could be underwater in your house or on bad economic times. It's just terrible. But Allie decides to solve it by punching Harrison in the face and then announcing that I'm not damaged and crazy. Which that's actually wrong. She's both of those things. And then Harrison and Meadow, after everyone's screaming, including Ivy, who's just aghast at the whole thing, says that you've been marked by the killer. Ivy storms back across the street, and Allie and Oz are in tow, and she says, look, this isn't the person I've married. You're brittle and all this other stuff, and you're a goddamn Jill Stein voter, which I thought that was pretty funny. And then Oz notices that the serial killer Happy Face is on the neighbor's house, too.
Fuck him.
Allie says, fuck him. They probably painted it themselves. The truck sprayer comes again. Allie confronts him. And this time there's actually dudes in hazmat suits spraying down their yard. And she says, are you from Halliburton or Monsanto? Yeah. Yeah, they're fucking spraying around glowing green Roundup on your goddamn yard. This is Monsanto's endgame. Goddamn.
Did you notice earlier, though, that all the dead birds were only on their yard?
Yeah. I assume the neighbors threw it there. Like, I don't...
I'm just making sure we understand that the whole street that got sprayed, that spray wasn't the reason all the birds died. Someone put birds in their yard.
No, and I don't think that they're actually spraying any kind of chemical. I think this is just they're fucking with Allie and Ivy.
Maybe.
Mostly Allie. So she rips off one of their masks, and it actually is a weird version of, like, he's wearing a face that looks like the smiley face with the nose shot through.
Yeah.
And Allie passes out, and they continue spraying.
Right in her face.
Right in her stupid face. Kai's talking to Harrison, doing the pinky game with her, and he says, tell me your first homosexual experience. And he says, I fucked my older sister's boyfriend. I actually gave him a hand job, and then a blowy several days later. Mm-hmm. And asks him what's his biggest regret, that he married his fag hag, which I assume is Meadow.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kai forces him to confess that he wished that she was dead.
Oh.
Do you think that he really does? Like, why would he wish her dead?
Because I think that's a kinder fate than not being wanted.
Yeah, but why don't they just say, hey, look, we got on this with the best of it. And I get it. The answer is because they're in a fucking stupid cult. And they're being brainwashed. But it seems a reasonable thing to do is sit down and like, look, we got in this with the best of intentions. That, you know, hey, we're 30 and hey, we love each other and we're best friends. And like, is sex even that important anyway? And they get married. But now you want to be penetrated by a man and I want to penetrate men. So let's just like, it doesn't have to be bitter. We treat each other right and go away.
That's the reason they got married in their 40s is so they wouldn't have to spend their time alone anymore. And I think that's the point. I think they both kind of fear loneliness, but now he's got a
Harrison
new...
Harrison seems like he's a hot...
He's got a new cop friend
mm-hmm.
Who stars in a show on MTV, so there's that.
Does he really?
I think so.
Okay.
But yeah, I think that's just a kinder fate than having to break her heart yourself. It's just not to want her to be killed or murdered or anything like or suffer greatly, but just
right.
You know, if it were you just didn't exist anymore, then that's then it absolves you, really.
Oh my God, that's what happened to Lacey Peterson. It's killing you is easier than going through a divorce. I think we can both agree. So next day, Allie tries to sell the cops on the neighbors from hell, which is especially funny because the cops are in bed with the neighbors from hell.
Oh.
And he immediately says, is your partner...
How did you get here so fast?
She sees him, like, walk out the front door of Harrison's house with rumpled clothes and, like, just mosey on over. He accuses her of being psychotic, and she says, I'm not crazy. And to prove it, she presents him with a bag of dead exploded guinea pig. He says, hey, got bad news. That mark has been authenticated. There'd be a genuine ser- what the fuck? They're like Banksy. They know. Did I mispronounce Banksy, right?
Yeah. But
I put the Russian accent on it.
But I mean, no, they definitely have a signature pattern.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it's not. I'm pretty sure I could with a fucking can of Krylon.
Maybe if you got to
duplicate
see one, maybe if you got to see one up close. But these images haven't been released to the public.
That's true.
It's just where the news can sort of like glimpse through half a window.
Hmm.
Or something like that.
Okay. You might be right.
I know I am.
He says,
again,
hey, we need to set up
surveillance. A lot of murder shows inside this head of mine.
And he goes, we need to set up surveillance here. I'm thinking they're bringing the inpatient to her since she won't go and put herself inpatient. You hear Oz upstairs say, shit, and the moms come running. He explains he accidentally clicked on a link and disabled the parental controls, which they're going to ground him for, but they demand this be seen what he was looking at. And it turns out... it's a webcam footage of Winter finger banging Allie.
Whoa.
And Ivy, to her great credit, is not having any of this shit. Because you know what? You know what? You might have a clownophobia and you might have all kinds of different phobias, but you don't got telling the truth of phobia.
Right.
And you fucking stepped out of line and let that shit happen, and the least you could have done is come clean about it.
She put this woman through hell. And won't have sex with her to connect with her anymore, but she just gave it up readily for Winter. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty damning.
Yeah. So Ivy's going to
wonder how far it would have gone if
the alarm hadn't gone off.
Right.
So anyway, I mean, who knows? Maybe she's 5 seconds away from saying, no, we can't do this. I love my wife too much. But
letting
we'll
the girl in the bathroom while you're undressed is a step too far, I think.
And also, by the time she's got around to your feeling up your tits, then for sure.
Letting
pump
her
the
make
brakes.
Your bath water was a little bit too inviting.
Loofing your back, honestly. It didn't, like, it got, she let it progress. But anyway, we got some feedback about that.
This is very hand the rocks to cradle.
So they're about to, she's about to storm off with Oz, and then the cops come roaring up. We think to their house, which is actually Harrison's house. Harrison's coming out screaming in his underwear, his bloody underwear, that he didn't do anything.
Can I get your best Billy Eichner impression of him screaming?
I don't need to calm down. You need to calm up. Nah, see, it's terrible. It's
good.
Terrible.
It's good.
Let's hear your best one.
You're getting there.
Let's hear your best one.
I don't have one.
Coward.
Yes.
You know, Akai says that's the worst trait about a person.
Hmm.
So
I'm not gonna
how do you feel
for it.
About a sociopathic psychopath thinking you're the worst? How's that feel?
Comfortable with that.
So they have a big street confrontation where Allie's screaming at him. He's screaming at Allie. And then the cops take Harrison down for the second time that day. Hey-oh! And Ozzy has disappeared in all the commotion. But they find him in the neighbor's house. And there's blood everywhere. Although I think that was blood or shit, honestly. It's very brown.
Might be a little bit of both.
A little bit of both. It's all over the walls. It's up and down the staircase. It's a mess. And that's it. That's the episode.
How dead do you think Meadow is?
On a scale of 1 to super, I'd say super.
I don't know. I think there is a chance.
Fake death?
Yeah. There's a chance that Kai used their secrets against each other. Hid away Meadow so that he could play this mind game against Harrison.
Yeah.
I mean, because we don't know what their
make him
goal
feel
is.
It. Make him feel it, yeah.
The doctor could be the scarecrow to Kai's Joker, for all we know.
Right,
just making them go insane and manifest all of their deepest fears.
I like what you're putting down.
Thank you.
And then all that blood was just a combination guinea pig pigeon.
Yeah. There's a lot of blood from that guinea pig. Plenty to spear across as well.
So. Yeah, you just split a pigeon in half and you just rub it on the walls like you're using a kind of sponge.
Yeah, and then toss the body in the neighbor's yard.
Like Martha Stewart, you know? She just crack open a pigeon, just start sponging, you know, overlapping.
Yeah, I remember that episode.
Sure it's a random, it's random pattern. You don't want it to look too, like, you know, put together.
Right, I saved that on my Pinterest board.
It's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the episode. Shall we get the feedback?
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can send feedback to ahs@baldmove.com.
Or?
You can participate in our forums at forums.baldmove.com.
Or
follow us along on all social media at or slash baldmove, whichever way the, you know, it's slash or at.
Or you can write in blood on our walls. Which is my preferred method.
Just crack a guinea pig in half. Make sure it's you know, just whatever. Your guinea pigsmanship is legible. Nathan's up for aunt. He says, I want to take something back that I said during the premiere.
No takesy backsies.
Well, he said he thought he'd be hate watching his show, but I don't think I will now.
Okay, you can have it back.
The characters in this show are like parodies of actual political thoughts cranked up to 11. Coming this season knowing that it would be politically heavy, my mistake was going into the first episode taking it too seriously. This season feels like a dark comedy with horror elements more than just straight-up American horror. I find that I enjoy the show more if I treat it like a grandiose carnival ride. Would you agree? Why do I punch up the emails on this show and none other?
I don't know.
I'm just fucking giving it to these emails.
I love it.
Dramatic as shit.
It's
all right.
So good.
Would you agree with I feel like that's kind of what I've been – that's what I've been ranting about this episode, right?
Definitely, for sure.
Are you picking up what I'm laying down? What Nathan here is laying down?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
That's just some quality color commentary. Moving on to Lucas from Milwaukee. I think it's pretty obvious that Murphy is setting up the cult to ultimately represent the political divide we have in this country. Specifically, how anytime a cult leader says something, their followers are expected to believe them fully. Without getting too political, this is what it feels like when Trumpers and millennial liberals, goddamn you millennial liberals, just keep repeating the talking points they've been told, even if it clearly defies logic. I really like this horror concept being applied to real-life situations, and I like what Cecily said about the theme of not being able to tell if this is real life. Are the clowns real? Did we really elect a clown president? Is this real life? It's so hard to tell. I look forward to seeing where the season goes. I was rewatching the first episode with my wife, and I noticed something that may explain Winter's sudden change of character that she is so willing to fuck with this family. When Kai and Winter are doing the pinky lock scene, Kai asks who she wants to kill, and she asserts it's the salt of the earth people who got Trump elected. Which made me think, Kai overheard the two leads talking about how she voted for Jill Stein and basically is at fault for not voting for Hillary. Now Winter would have the motivation for wanting to kill or harm a person who got Trump elected. The thing is like salt of the earth refers more to like rural
the cashier
folk.
At the supermarket.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The wearing a MAGA hat.
Yeah.
Chanting lock her up. That's the thing. Right. Like it's a solid theory otherwise and I also
think that maybe they were being targeted before the latte incident.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But then again, to his point, the doctor could have been providing them all that information a long time ago.
Yeah.
6 months before the election, she could have said, I'm thinking about voting for Jill Stein, you know,
something like that. I'm honestly, my only debate in my mind right now, and I could be very wrong often, is who is the leader? Is it the doctor or Kai? Who inducted who into the cult?
I think it's another secret shadowier figure.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Ivy. The blonde cop.
Okay.
All right. Darlene Z. I love the podcast and hate Allie. Love the sweet torture that the Kai killer clowns, the KKC, are giving to Allie. I like the fact that Allie seems strong in situations where her phobias don't come into play. She handled Kai's visit to her home very well. I can't wait to see how long Kai has been plotting against Allie and Ivy, unless Ivy's in on it. No! Ivy is not in. I will not hear Allison Pill blaggarded anymore in this podcast.
You won't hear it?
And we'll not hear it. Will not come out of my mouth.
Like the season 7 Game of Thrones leaks.
What?
We're just not even going to consider
That's right.
Ivy's speculation
That's
anymore.
That's right. Speculation's dead. She's leaked. And he's clearly been watching them for a while with the latte to the face, that and sending KKCs to the house numerous times. I feel like there will be some flashback to this because Ryan loves those. Fuck yeah. We already got that time traveling coffin episode. Love the new creepy neighbors. They'll be causing some fantastic trouble. I'm also loving the way Winter is educating Oz. Oh, yeah. It will be really interesting to see where this goes. Hoping Oz grows strong and saves the day somehow. We all knew that gun was a bad idea. Poor Pedro. I don't have a fear of clowns, but these ones have me on my toes, looking over my shoulder. Kudos, Mr. Murphy. Humans really do love fear. P.S. Somewhere deep in this story, perhaps Ryan is saying all politicians are clowns. Or robots. Robo clowns.
Or alien monsters attacking the Starship Troopers.
I'm actually surprised people are afraid of these clowns.
I'm not.
I'm just not afraid. Like, even Twisty, he's not as scary so much as he's just kind of cool.
I mean, if it were like a John Wayne Gacy, like actual creepy man in makeup that just gives you like the chills.
Yeah, what were we
that's
watching?
Different.
What were we watching
but if it's
today?
Just
oh,
an asshole who's obviously wearing a rubber mask. I don't think that's scary.
Yeah, like John Oliver's show this weekend, they actually showed a picture of
John Wayne Gacy.
Oh, was it Gacy? Or,
yeah.
Okay. As a birthday clown, and holy fuck.
It's so fucking creepy.
That is really creepy. So I guess I'm afraid of clowns, too, if they're actually serial killers at a kid's thing waving at the camera. All right. Let's see. Tyler, regarding the butchery on Main, I feel that's inspired by a restaurant, Gwyn, in Hollywood. It's owned by Curtis Stone and run by his brother, and it's a butcher shop slash fine dining restaurant. The food's great, but the conceit reeks of the type of hipster pretension that we see on display in many of AHS's characters. It's a huge deal when Gwyn opened here in L.A. last year, and I'm sure Murphy would have seen it a time or two. By now, I agree with you guys that this restaurant concept's a stretch for this Michigan suburb. I mean, here's what would be progressive for this part of Michigan. A fusion. You know, it's the chain where they have, like, sushi and burritos blend together.
Not fair.
Nah, That's about what that place can sustain.
No. This is a very affluent area.
Is it?
Yes.
Huh. Okay.
Those exist in Michigan.
Yeah.
You hick.
Okay.
But I just don't know. We already discussed the restaurant pretty in-depthly.
Okay. Let's move on to Amanda G. One thing I thought was strange in 701 was when Winter spoke on the phone to her friend after Trump was announced president. You only hear her side of the voice, which made me think, was her friend even really there? Did she actually drop out of college to be on the campaign trail? I don't recall seeing any Hillary promo items in her room, and if someone was so dedicated, wouldn't it just be filled with leftover flyers, stickers, banners, etc.? Maybe Winter is also a nutcase. I mean, who seriously leaves a blackout situation to go home to protect her pottery? I mean, that's the thing. Winter is certainly a nutcase.
If she's
because she's doing all these things.
Maybe. Or maybe she's just one of those people who likes chaos.
She didn't.
I could certainly
see
myself being in
that. That explains why she's stumping for Hillary.
When I was a teenager. Yeah. I don't. If she's pretending to be on the phone, for whose benefit is it? She knows Kai to be in a different, completely different room in the house.
Right, and he's fucking the TV, screaming America.
Right.
It's for the it's for the audience. That's who that performance was.
Okay. I don't think. I mean, I don't agree. Not. To say
I.
That it's
I'm
valid.
With you. I'm with you. I'm just playing Amanda's advocate here. Second, looping back to your theory that Ivy and Kai are in cahoots with each other, I could totally understand why Ivy would get a hold. Would plot to get Allie out of her life. Does the fact that I find Sarah P's character so insufferable actually mean she's a good actress? Maybe they're doing a twisted take on the kids are all right, i.e. lesbian mom falls in love with her sperm donor. Whoa,
spoilers.
Whoa.
Shit.
Whoa. What do you think about that?
Yes, I agree. I think
you think Ivy and Kyron cahoots?
No.
Okay, because I'm not going to tolerate that.
We're
talk
not.
In this podcast.
We're
all
not.
Right. I'm backing down.
I agree that Sarah Paulson's character is insufferable. And I feel that way about almost every character that she's played on the show for each season.
Mm-hmm.
I have also seen Sarah Paulson do other things that I didn't hate her in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, she...
Name three. No.
Oh, my God.
She's... I see. I looked for it, and I see what you're talking about, her lip.
Yeah.
Like, most people's lips are concave. Hers is convex.
Right, on the top.
Like it's all
area.
Weirdly mounded up, and I when she cries, I understand the like kind of the dewy moistness that you're seeing there.
Right.
All right. I don't think it's necessarily a hideous thing, but it is. It's kind of distracting now that you mention it.
Says a man who wears hair to cover his upper lip. Sounds like you might be projecting a little bit.
I wear a beard to cover my lantern jaw, thank you. My upper lip is fine, especially in proportion to my lantern jaw. Let's move on to Kyle J. Kyle J says, I'd like to discuss two scenes you guys discussed in the pod this week. We got a lot of stuff. I've just realized all these were from last week, but we got so much feedback. So much. I actually, for the first time, had like fucking make choices and edit.
What?
We're like, we've blown up.
No.
We've like doubled our traffic from last year.
Have we blown up like a guinea pig in a microwave?
Yes, we have. Maybe a gerbil. Maybe not quite guinea pig, but certainly we've blown up to gerbil proportions.
All right.
The theme I want to discuss is sex, and the scenes in the question are A, Allie and Ivy after her scare early in the second episode, and B, Allie and Winter in the bathtub later in the episode. In scene A, you discussed how Allie may not have been in the mood directly after a scare. While I do believe this is true, as Allie's phobias are mentioned in episode 1 as an obstacle in her sex life, I think it's important to look at the scene through Ivy's perspective, as she is clearly becoming increasingly impatient and frustrated with Allie's constant quote-unquote hallucinations. To me, I felt like her consoling, connecting with Allie is an attempt to reclaim her from these paranoiac episodes. She loves her wife, wants nothing more than to free her from these fears, as far as we, the audience, knows. Perhaps intimacy is the answer. In scene B, Allie is at a low point. She's had her cage rattled, quite literally, as you pointed out, by Kai earlier in the day and is struggling with her sanity more than ever. We have the scene following the death of Chef Racist Guy, where Allie talks about her instincts and her fears being validated. However, she told time and again that it is all happening in her head. I can only imagine that this would be an awful feeling. Does she trust her gut? Does she ignore it? What if, as many theorize, these hallucinations are real? I imagine that is, in part, why she is having a hard time taking the medicine. Maybe they would impact her ability to deal with whatever may or may not be happening. As to her current state of mind, it doesn't surprise me that she let her guard down a little bit by letting Winter draw her a bath. It's that first harmless step towards being unfaithful. Oh, we're just getting a cup of coffee, nothing else. This door is wedged open. That was my best Sarah Paulson, by the way. I plumped up my lip for it. The door is wedged open when she let her draw the bath and is pushed even further when Winter begins not so subtly to seduce her by removing her top. Then she literally wedges her door open. No, that was me freestyling. At this point, Allie knows she's in trouble. The seeds are planted. Whoa! So then when Winter comes to wash her back and progresses on to other parts, it isn't shocking that there isn't much of a pushback from Allie. She's giving in to how good it feels compared to the stress she's been experiencing in the last few days, weeks, months. When she does sort of snap out of it, Winter's lightning quick to ensure that she can continue. I believe she says something along the lines of, I won't say anything about the gun. It will be our secret. So last thing to bring it together, I wanted to touch about Allie's fears and how they relate to sex. It's come up multiple times in the first few episodes, yet I'm not sure you two have touched on it. The clowns are actually sexually charged. You've got ball gag clown, penis face guy clown, and on more than one occasion, they have been engaging in some sort of sexual acts. As discussed above, sex in general seems to be playing an important thematic role. I'd love to hear both of your thoughts on how this might factor into the rest of the season. It's an eventual outcome. You're right. That's been staring us in the face. Why have we not talked more about the clown sex and Allie's relationship to sex and how that feeds into her phobias?
I don't know. I mean, there has to have been some sort of event that, like I said earlier in the podcast, sort of like fuse the two ideas.
Yeah.
Maybe you mean like some kind of clown experience that turns her on,
mm-hmm.
but also simultaneously turns her off. I don't think that works.
Mm.
You can't be terrified of something and like terrified so much that you can't even look at it and mm-hmm. aroused by it at the same time.
I don't know, because like I mean I think that's true for most people, but you know, knowing humans like I do and what wide discrepancy in taste, I wouldn't put it past people to be horrified and afraid and aroused all at the same time.
If it was like a masochistic thing,
right? That's a thing. Yeah,
but I don't think that's her thing. Have you seen her exhibit any signs of that?
No. No, you're right. I'm making an objection where it doesn't belong in the specific case. Carry on.
That's all I got.
All right. I mean, like I said, you're clearly right that it's a big subtext, if not text, but I don't have anything useful to say on it. Like, I don't know. Is it something stating like Americans' peculiar sensitivity to sex where we don't mind violence? Like,
I think there is a big group of people who find clowns to be sexualized.
Seriously?
Yeah. You don't think so?
Like, maybe. Like, are you talking like Jared Leto Joker, Margot Robbie,
or even
Harley Quinn?
These people on masks.
Hmm.
A clown with...
I don't find him sexy at all.
Yeah, that's not... You are not the person I'm talking about.
All right.
I'm saying there are people out there.
I'm just saying here's what I'm trying to say.
Sexy or be a, you know, like a fetish.
I've been a citizen of the internet since I was like 12 years old, and I have gone far afield and seen a lot of weird shit on the internet in a sexual context.
Okay.
Kind of seek that stuff out. Judgment free zone.
A little too much information.
Never have I seen clown porn. Never seen it.
Oh, I think you just never looked for it.
I've seen dinosaur porn. I've seen alien porn. I've seen like weird all kinds of weird configurations and improbable quantities of fluids and solids and gynecological experiments. But I've never seen clown porn ever. Never, okay. Never has it hit the front page of Pornhub.
I just Googled clown porn and I got quite a few results.
Were people saying it just doesn't exist?
No.
Like think pieces saying, why is there no clown porn? Is it the exception to Rule 34 on the internet?
No, this particular young clown lady likes a penis in her mouth.
Okay. Maybe we can watch that when we get home and just...
Oh, you
just,
know
just
what?
For
let's
science.
Not, let's not
for
do
science.
That.
For science. All right. Well, I'm wrong. That's frequently the case.
I mean, it's fine that you haven't seen it frequently, but, you know, do you have a type? Does Google know your specific search algorithms?
What Google knows and doesn't know about me is not a subject for this podcast. Okay. Let's put that. Let's get that thing straight.
You brought it up.
Colin C. Well, that was before I brought that up when I felt safe and secure in a world that I thought didn't include clown porn.
Are you triggered?
A bit, yeah. Okay. A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit.
Okay.
Colin C. I know you briefly touched on it and called the clown with three noses the dildo nose clown, but would greatly increase my listening pleasure if you would please, from henceforth, refer to that clown as Dick Nose the Clown. Please and thank you. See, Colin, I can't do that.
I can't do that either.
Because he'd have to be the mini Dick Nose Clown or Dick's Nose Clown.
Dick's Nose.
Or what's that, the Janus Dick Face Clown, the three-headed god or the double-faced god?
Janus, yeah.
You know, like the Sean Bean James Bond character.
I'm Googling Dick Nose Clown, and that's not a thing.
Okay.
So it must be an inside joke for our listener and his friends.
No, we talked about this last week, how people said that this clown looks like he tripped and fell into a pile of dildos and they just got lodged in all of his...
I recall that.
Head holes.
Yes.
Yes.
Why are you arguing with me? The listener just asked that we call him Dick Nose Clown. I'm trying to understand what that's a reference to.
That dildo sticking out of his face.
Dick Nose Clown, the phrase, specifically calls back to what we talked about before?
Yes, yes.
No, it does not.
So you're saying, what is a dildo if not a rubber dick?
That's not what he's asking us to say. He said, instead of saying dildo face clown, call him Dick Nose the Clown.
I feel like I'm tasting color. I'm losing my mind. I don't understand
the email again. If you don't understand, read the email again.
He wants us to call Dick Nose the Clown. The clown has three dick noses shooting out of all sides of his face.
But why that specifically? Why that name specifically?
Because he's got a Dick Nose the Clown fetish, okay?
You know what? Fuck it. I think he'll understand what I'm saying. Please write in again because
I would love
this is rocket
please,
surgery if, we're if, trying to perform over here.
Yes, yes. We need this is probably going to end our marriage if we don't have a clear ruling who's right and who's wrong. ahs@baldmove.com. P.S. Cecily's wrong. Meredith B. regarding
be so embarrassed next week.
Oh, now I've just triggered the fucking sisterhood, and they're gonna all come to your defense, and it's gonna. I'm already invalidating the results.
No. You saying that is
it's like Trump before he won the election. Well, if you're not losing, it's rigged.
You saying that is what's gross.
Okay. Well, we can agree on that. Sam B. sent us in an email that triggered me. Says the TV show triggers little known phobia. It's a CNN article about. That American Horror Story is deliberately triggering people with trypophobia, which, as we've already discussed, is a Reddit-only bullshit fear of holes. It is not a real phobia. And I'm pretty confident in saying that. But their source seems to be people bitching on Reddit. So I don't...
But we're totally fine with vampires slitting people's throats and bathing in blood and
killing
children and insane asylum patients being mutilated. We're all fine with all of that, but God fucking forbid you show me some holes.
Let me read you this. First of all, it begins, editor's note, there are no triggering images embedded in the story. There is a slideshow at the bottom with a warning slate as its first image. However, to explain to those without trypophobia what the disorder is like, we've had to use a few descriptive phrases of common triggers. Please be cautious while reading. It was supposed to be a fun lunch outing in the Big Apple with her mother and grandmother. But when Jennifer Anderson saw the advertisement for this season's American Horror Story on the side of a New York taxi, she had to pull her car over and fast. I was having a full-blown panic attack, said Anderson, who lives
Bullshit.
In Norfolk,
Connecticut.
In New York. Yeah, from Connecticut. My pulse was racing. I was so nauseous, I thought I'd throw up. My mother and grandmother were like, what's wrong with you? And I didn't want to ruin my family's day, but I couldn't help myself. Again, I've seen this discussed a lot, and I've yet to see any fucking psychologist say that this is a real thing.
Right.
It seems to be a place where people like to pass around these images and say how disgusting it makes them feel, and that to me says it's not a. It'd be like that woman in the prologue of this episode, skipping around a casket factory saying, oh my God, I'm so fucking ferret phobia right now. Oh my God. Oh God, look at that coffin. Oh, I'm so, oh, look at this one. Oh, it's so, I mean, like, who does that?
Right.
So CNN, I don't know.
I got a better one for you.
Okay.
I think I am mildly arachnophobic.
Okay.
I don't like spiders.
Sure. That's
spiders are super creepy. I can't stand looking at them. I don't even like killing them or anything like that. But when I had a spider the size of roughly my palm or hands land on my chest when we were in the river a couple weeks ago, I cried. But I know I was gonna live through it.
Yeah. So do you have do you?
I don't know. I just think these things are so weird. Like Allie dropping the comic and sort of like blacking out for a second, having the what do you call it? Not tunnel vision, but the
woo.
Yeah, the tunnel ear sound.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you
medical term.
It's being shelled on the beach of Normandy in Saving Private Ryan.
There
syndrome.
You go.
All right. Anyway, let's move on. Travis.
And speaking of drama queens, can we talk about the war? No, I'm just
Jesus. Okay. Yeah. And here's the thing, it's like I'm probably gonna feel like a real asshole in 15 years and it turns out that this is a real thing and I just like mockingly referred to this woman having a full-on freak out by this
You've
stuff.
You've created a future serial killer.
Yeah, probably.
By telling them that the way they feel is wrong.
This is going to be my regressive view in 15 years that I just like my son is gonna be like, Dad, you just can't understand. Why? I don't know. I can't even imagine a future world where this will be a problem for anybody.
Yeah.
Anyway, Travis, not a huge AHS guy. I've actually never finished a season, though I've started four of them, including this one, and never really stopped watching for a lack of enjoyment. Okay. Anyway, me neither. I just kept on going to a zin. Fuck me, I guess. Anyway, this isn't relevant, but I wanted to start by saying that I've listened to your coverage to the extent that I've watched the last season. About a half of it, and this season to date, I really love your work on the show. You just give it another couple episodes. You'll trail off. Anyways, all that aside, I was thinking that the cult of it all and Aaron's disappointment with the cultiness of cult so far, and what if it's the wrong cult? I was thinking that Aaron is really going to have some egg on his face when a group of horror clowns fronted by Kai start a cover band and bust into Fire Woman or She Sells Sanctuary in the middle of episode 6 or 7. I bet Allie will be recruited just in time to play the bass.
Oh, Aaron's going to be embarrassed by a lot of things next week.
Travis would be embarrassed if I just stopped reading his email halfway through is all I'm saying.
Well, he doesn't have editorial controls tonight. So you're in, Travis.
Allie C., I should probably admit that I have this conflicting desire to watch AHS despite finding it particularly lousy and overall garbage entertainment by Ryan Murphy. Garbage!
Hey, we have that in common.
That being said, I was surprised that you were even questioning whether or not the show would be able to follow through with their overarching theme of bees. My question is, when have they ever related their theme to their seasons? Particularly, I've never found the former seasons to correlate to their overly exaggerated promotional visuals of the show. In fact, I think the majority of AHS's success is due to their strong PR and advertisement team. True. True. Every year I begrudgingly watch the show and despise it. It can be maddening just how truly bad it is. But then next season's promotional photos get released and I get sucked back in every time.
Yes.
I mean, here's the thing. Once or twice a season, I remember why I watched the show.
Here's the thing. I agree with you completely.
Uh-huh.
I rage quit the show 4 episodes into the first season because I was like, what the fuck?
Uh-huh.
These people are out of their mind if they think that this is good or that they're going to continue on. But
right.
I feel like I did it in reverse. Like, I hate quit this first season. I didn't even watch the second season when they first came out. And then we started on Coven together, right?
Right.
Because you were interested, and I was like, you know what? It's just balls to the wall crazy that I think it's something we'll have a good time talking about. So right. I feel like that's just sort of the Ryan Murphy psychosis that we all fall under.
Right.
You know how, like, viewership sort of trails off at the end of a season?
Sure, sure.
Mine trailed on.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people are starting to feel that way based on just what people are writing into us.
I also kind of disagree with the fact that the promotional materials never pay off, because, like, if there's a lot of clown themes, there's usually a clown. If there's, like, I remember in Coven, there was this, like, snake crawling from a woman's mouth. And sure enough, Angela Bassett comes slinking out with a snake on her shoulder during her voodoo mama ceremony.
Or, like, I mean, I'm not saying analogy held up.
Right. And here again, the bees have already paid off, because fucking Harrison is raising bees. Like, that's not going to be just some random detail about his life. It's not going to be a big point, but you will see something horrifying with bees this season.
Or, like, the dead dog, which I know you just can't wait to see a dead dog on the show.
That's not true.
But
I'm bracing myself for it. There's
the guy
difference.
In, like, the hazmat suit holding a dead animal. Well, we saw that come true in this episode.
There's a hazmat, and they're spraying dead
animals.
That's dog
dead
be gone.
Everywhere. Dog be gone. That's why we never see dogs
the
in
birds,
the show.
The birds are just collateral damage.
Maybe they're the Illuminati.
It's a Fight Club situation where Allie is actually Kai at night, and she's ordering strikes against any pet that could potentially come in her house.
But to this point, I think that the promotional materials are a completely different kind of art than we're getting in the show itself.
All right.
Like
last year's
promotional materials, releasing all those different trailers, was like Justin Roiland doing an interdimensional space cable. Mm. Like Ryan Murphy just wanted to throw it all out there and do all these fun ideas. And I loved it. I loved it.
I'd like to see an animated show called
great.
Ryan and Murphy.
Ryan and Murphy.
Voiced by Justin Roiland is all about what life inside the non-existent American Horror Story writer's room looks like. Okay, Christine from New Jersey. You asked for a therapist to write in about client-patient confidentiality, and here I am. First of all, that scene between Dr. Vincent, that's his name, not Dr. Feelgood, and Ivy was absolute crap. He had no problem telling her all about the rest of his session with Allie, including her potentially developing agoraphobia, but he can't tell Ivy about her getting a gun. Good fucking point. He's just essentially giving her bullet points of everything they talked about, but I can't tell you.
I'm going to save the juiciest stuff for later.
Yeah, I'm going to keep this one in my back pocket.
Excuse me, I have to go tell the neighbors about your wife's condition. Excuse me, I'll be right back.
Get the fuck on out of here. If I had a client that was hallucinating murderous clowns, caught on camera swinging and throwing wine bottles in a grocery store, crashed her car into a lamppost, and bought a gun, I would absolutely break confidentiality. She got a gun for protection, but is presenting as paranoid, and I can't properly assess what is a safety risk, and there's a child in the home? Take me to court. I dare ya. That being said, this is probably all pointless because Dr. Vincent is clearly, in my most professional opinion, fucked up. Who else is thinking he's actually the secret leader of the cult?
Me.
We are. We're raising our hands, both on the podcast. And also, if you're looking for help with your clown-based gun involving... neighbor phobia. Don't see Christine in New Jersey, because she will rat you the fuck out. So,
but what is her stance on clown porn?
Clown porn? Yes. How sick is an individual who would watch clown pornography? We need the professional opinion on that.
You're ruining so many future generations.
Audrey C. I went through a lot this episode. The first quarter, I yelled in anger at the ridiculousness of every character, or should I say caricature, of these idiot people.
Yes.
The second quarter, I still yelled, but decided I would hate watching my first ever show. The last half, I stopped yelling and decided that Aaron was right. This is a Twin Peaks-esque show, and that is a fantasy land, a bizarre world, a sadistic Mr. Rogers. That sounds really like a really smart take. I don't remember making it.
I'm pretty sure that was my thesis for like the past two seasons we podcasted.
It's funny because like people getting me and Jim confused is understandable, but if they start like attributing, like that's just why we need feminism.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You need to hold up a sign and put on Instagram because people credit my insights to my male co-host only because he has a penis. Hashtag why.
Okay, fun fact: someone did write an email that said, "Hey, Aaron and wife." swear to God.
Right.
I was like, right. Okay.
Yeah, you're just my accessory now. Like a Louis Vuitton bag. You're cute and attractive.
Just so everyone knows, we both get the emails.
Right, right, right.
I've stopped reading them since then.
Anyway, in reality, most of the other AHS seasons haven't been set in reality, though people, for the most part, were true to the basic nature of the characters. Anyway, thinking about this world as some sort of good place-like political hell on Earth got me through the episode. The annoying part of the show is the extremes that each character pivots from. It's dizzying. One minute, the sweet new beekeeper neighbors are loving that there are lesbian neighbors. The next minute, they're calling them lesbies and accusing them of white privilege and giving their kid a pet. Then being concerned with them about being marked. And how is Ivy okay with Allie killing Pedro and calling it self-defense? These characters continue to make these pivots that are completely nonsensical and unrealistic. The best part of the episode is Allie getting slapped. And yes, Cecily, her lips are distractingly large.
Thank you.
That said, can we just go ahead and assume that everyone is in on it? Yes. No, I mean, that's...
Well, that, did you just admit to Ivy being in on it?
Not Ivy.
I will Everybody agree else, that I feel like Ivy was like underwhelmingly reactionary to Pedro's death.
Well, but I'm saying like...
Just, you know, a day before they were worried about this man's livelihood and his family and, you know, falsely accusing him, even though... I mean, maybe they actually secretly hated him.
I think Alice...
Maybe this was their way out of like absolving themselves of the guilt. Ivy, like, yeah, let's let him die a murderer.
Ivy's actually dialogue was, don't feel guilty for killing Pedro. Just kidding. Brian, better known as Texas Sandman on the forums. Oh boy, this show keeps getting better and better. I had some laugh out loud moments, including an almost spit take that nearly woke up the wife and baby.
Which one?
My highlights and thoughts in this episode include love the stand your ground commentary and lesbian George Zimmerman line. Also, options for attackers in this town being either ISIS or clowns. Too funny. Yeah, it's either ISIS or the damn clown people.
Right.
Is this some sort of Truman type show? Is everyone in on this except for Allie? Has anyone really died? I think everyone but Ivy, Allie, and Ozzy are in on it.
I don't know. I mean, maybe.
Including Pedro.
Ooh. Just off the cuff theory crafting here.
Okay.
What if Allie is the ringleader, so to speak?
That's what I'm saying.
The master of the cult.
It's
because of the fact that she's losing her mind and she's imagining these really crazy coincidental connections.
If I had the license to it, I'd start playing Pixies' Where Is My Mind right behind that. Because, like, I think there is a potential Fight Club situation on the table. I don't literally think she's actually Kai, but it would be. It would be stupid and hacky, but I might actually respect that they really went for it, that she's the original brainwasher, like her therapist, like she recruited her therapist and like this is some kind of psychotic break she's having.
Right.
That sounds really stupid, but I'm kind of in for it.
Yeah.
I'm all in for it.
Agreed.
Not sure if the guinea pig is in the microwave is a nod to the first season, but there is a similar scene where Kate Mara appears to have put someone's dog in a microwave. Kate Mara was in first season?
Yeah, she was.
Wow. Oh. Wow.
You know who we didn't talk about? What? Which I wish we could go back in time in the main podcast and talk about this.
Do it.
Dermot Mulroney was in the episode.
What?
Yeah. Dermot Mulroney was the TV.
Delmot Maroney.
Was the anchor.
McDermott?
And his name, you notoriously always get mixed up with
Dilbert.
Dylan McDermott,
Del
who was
Looney?
The star of the first season.
Ah.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's not Delvin McRooney?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay. I can't get any of their names right. Like
more. I mean, you can't get any names right.
Dermot.
You can't get Joe Smith right.
Dermot. All right. So it just turned out. Anyway, when Kate appears to be someone's dog in a microwave, it turned out to be just tomatoes, but it was gross either way. Was that really a G-pig in there or a ploy to enrage Allie? That's a good question. I mean, it made the guinea pig noise, but then again, we heard a ghost go hurrah and not be there last episode. So maybe that's the house just being a ventriloquist, and it was just a sock full of tomatoes.
Or the house is the leader of the cult. I'm not ruling anything out yet.
Domicilophilia.
I'm just going to make all the predictions so I can say I'm right later.
Domicilophilia is warring with domicilophobia, and he is not sure if he wants to fuck the house or burn it down.
Domiciliality? Nailed it.
That's all.
Domisexual? Yes, got it.
Domisexual. That's all the feedback that we have right now. If you'd like to send more of it in to us, including who's right or wrong, Cecil or Aaron, about whatever thing we're fighting
ding,
about.
Ding, ding, ding.
Send it to ahs@baldmove.com. Again, forums.baldmove.com if you want to discuss it amongst your fellow fans. There's also all of our social media stuff, @or/baldmove. And we will be back next week for another madcap, highly caffeinated, possibly drunken AHS cult podcast. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
See ya.